Welcome to Cartoonist Kayfabe. My name's Ed Piskor.
And I'm Tom Scholey.
Jimmy Rugg is off on some kayfabe business, but today we're going to take a look at the Wolverine miniseries by Chris Claremont and Frank Miller. First off, what do you have for us, Tom?
Well, I got from Marvel Comics, Fantastic Four Grand Design. Wolverine doesn't show up in this, but pretty much every other Marvel character does. It's the story of the Fantastic Four done in one complete volume.
You ever draw Wolverine? I don't think I've ever seen that.
I don't know that I've drawn him professionally. I may have.
I'll
think about it. Yeah. And then here's Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics. It's the story of Jack Kirby's life told in comic book form, the form that Kirby worked in his whole life, using the same tool that Jack Kirby used, a pencil, to draw the entirety of it and letter it to. You can also check out my Patreon. Go to patreon.com and search Tom Scholey. And follow me on Twitter, at Tom Scholey. Follow me on Instagram, at Tom_Scholey. And check out my YouTube channel, Total Recall Show.
Red Room Comics in the Wild, Murder on the Dark Web for Fun and Profit is the name of the game in the Red Room universe. Every single issue that you see is completely self-contained, and they come out every 4 weeks or so. So mid-September comes issue number 4. You can get these comics at your local comic shop or order them from the Fantagraphics website at my link tree in the description below this video, or go to my Patreon, patreon.com/edpiskor. For $3, you can get the archive of comics. Plus, I put new strips out every Tuesday. We're into the 6th issue, the Rat Queens issue of Red Room. And there's also a PDF of the free Comic Book Day comic up for free as a primer to the series on that Patreon. And Jim has a Patreon as well, patreon.com/JimRugg. He's got a lot of PDFs of process stuff, a lot of thought exercises and things, man. PDFs, collections of a bunch of drawings, some comics, a lot of commentary. Very much worth your buying dollar.
Yes, Patreon is very thorough and very clear and just really like a model. He's a model Patreon citizen, I'd say.
So, let's just get into it, man. The Wolverine miniseries, man. Here's my trade, here's yours. This is probably one of the first 5 trade paperbacks I ever bought when I was a kid, man. And like, the price was $10. See, yours is even older, dude, when the trades were $5. I have a couple $5 trades of G.I. Joe comics and a Swamp Thing. That was very cheap like that.
Yeah, and I mean, I grabbed mine relatively recently, like maybe within the past 6 years.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because I never got around to it.
Yeah. Like, you know, being a Miller fan as a little kid, I saw, you know, the Sin City, started piecing together the Daredevils, and the art and writing was what kind of drew me to his work, because the artwork... You know, if you take a look at that old issue of John Carter, Warlord of Mars, which, you know, I have in the stacks when I find it, man, like, we'll do an episode on that. He's coming from the Continuity Studios kind of school of cartooning, like drawing everything kind of right, accurate, no bells and whistles. It's about the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And because he wasn't the writer, per se, of this comic, it was one of the last ones that I needed to get my hands on whenever it was, like, I was in that mode of accumulating Frank Miller works.
I think that was kind of it for me too, like, because of like Chris Claremont's name on it, I thought like, oh, this is like a lesser, like Miller's just kind of tagging along on like the X-Men train or something, you know, like, I don't know what, you know, what the thought was.
But. A fascinating conceit, putting this comic together. It came as a sort of consequence of being the two kind of top creators of Marvel, you know, Chris Claremont writing the X-Men, Frank Miller doing Daredevil. They were in the same car when they came from New York to go to San Diego Comic-Con, and were just batting ideas together just for fun while they were presumably going past that wharf that has the big pirate ship. You guys know what I'm talking about, man. Anybody who's gone to the San Diego Comic-Con. And in those conversations, they put together an idea for this Wolverine series. Talking to Chris personally, he said that, you know, he did his basic standard script with Frank on the first issue, but as the series kind of progressed, and it's a 4-issue comic book series, as things progressed, it was a you know, 10-minute phone conversation, and then Frank was off and running.
Yeah, just with the cover, like, it's interesting, you talk about branding and, like, smashable brands and stuff. Like, Wolverine's knee looks just like his face, looks just like his shoulders. Like, it's like, you know, you just need a little tiny piece of Wolverine to know that it's Wolverine.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. I see what you mean by that. And definitely Lynn Varley color, right?
Yeah.
Like, that sublime watercolor gouache that she would use. That bright blue on that hair is fly as hell.
Yeah, the aesthetic is like the Elektra Lives Again aesthetic here. But, like, I'm just curious about the time, because the timing of this, because, like, it's all dated, like, 1987, like, Miller's text piece is in here, but, like, this feels like it came out of an earlier era. Like, it feels like it was made, like, while he was still, like, before Dark Knight. Am I wrong, or did he make this after Dark Knight?
Are we talking about this cover? Or
not the cover, the series.
Oh, it's before.
It's before. Okay, that's what I, because all this stuff is dated, like, all his talk is dated 1987, so I guess that's him talking specifically for this trade, collecting it, as opposed to, like, the production of the work.
Yeah, for sure. And we have the trades, man. I was talking with Jimmy yesterday. He was like, sorry, can't be there, man. We could have looked at the issues.
The actual issues. Yeah, I've never gotten my hands on the issues, but this is the cover of issue one.
Yeah, I have a couple of those issues, but...
A great cover, too. Like Miller is, like, really able to, like, boil things down, and it is that kind of, like, the come hither gesture, you know, and he's gonna slice you up.
Right. I sort of use that, actually, like, to a minor degree for this piece right here.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I mean, it's a great idea. Great ideas are worth stealing.
Going through these comics, like I get this, like, insecurity, because... You know, he's so stylized in his, like, later works. Mm-hmm. But when you see his stuff here, like, I still can't build the face that good.
Right.
When you see some of these faces, it's like, fuck, I still need to learn to draw.
Yeah, just the you know, like, I think getting around problems of, like, draftsmanship are how you create, like, an unforgettable style.
Yeah.
So it is, like, you know... This is like a blind spot from, like, I have a pretty good sense of, like, Miller's career and where he's at for different things, but for some reason this one kind of fell through the cracks for me, which is odd because this is, like, you can imagine when it came out, it was prime time stuff. Like, Wolverine was, like, the character, like, he, like, and you know, the Chris Claremont X-Men and stuff, you know, so
compositions are bulletproof in this series. So things like this, like, you just never saw this kind of treatment. On every page, he's allowing some negative space. Like, so that's something that is kind of worth noting. And there's a lot of negative space in these pieces, man, just bound inside that box.
And sometimes they put verbiage in these, but then sometimes, like this, they don't. And so, like, again, like, you're talking about trying to get your head around, like, drawing a realistic face that solid. For me, like, I'm trying to get my head around the design decisions, because they're really great and they work, but I don't understand, like, how you get there. Like, I feel so weird leaving this space there, like, unless I knew for certain I was going to put some words. But it is, like, it does work, and these composite, like, superheroes, even a guy who doesn't fly like Wolverine, superheroes are kind of about, you know, that balletic movement upward, you know, moving into the sky. And these compositions keep drawing your eye upward. You're constantly looking up at these characters. And then there'll be, you know, like, a panel that sends you back down. But it seems like this downward motion is more to, like, there to facilitate the move back up.
Nowadays, man, where people are tracing photographs and stuff, you would never get such a weird-looking bear. And I love this thing right here, man. He went to his, like, little morgue file, man, did the best he could, and came up with this. And I actually wish that, like, animals and all that kind of stuff in comics was kind of less referenced, so that you get a little bit more of this kind of thing. Because you accept it. You, like, mm-hmm. It's cool, you know?
We're in cartoon land. Like, we're in a comic. We're in cartoon land. You know, anything you draw here, you can get over, you know?
This motion mm-hmm. between the three panels is really fucking sick, man. A lot of the design decisions with the negative space, I wonder if it's just, like Stephen Bissett said in our shoot interview, it's a loathing of the rectangle. Mm-hmm. That's how Bissett
It breaks it up. Myth. You know, like, it just, it feels like he's referencing something. Maybe it's something in, like, Japanese design. It also, like, it feels kind of 80s. Like, I'm picturing, like, some kind of, like, you know, you're watching a commercial and there's, like, a graphic of, like, two, you know, pictures and one's moving up as the other's moving down. All, like, this thing of him, like, the first thing he does in this is, like, get in a fight with a bear, kill a bear. And I'm just thinking about how, like, times would have changed even, like, a couple years after this comic came out, where you could imagine if they made this in, like, maybe 1989 or 1990, he'd be going into this cave and then he'd, like, start making friends with the bear, and then the bear would be, like, eating out of his hand. Like, you wouldn't have him just, like, slaughter a bear. You know, he'd be sort of, like, friend to the woodland animals and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, and he becomes that. There's something about, like, the bear has a poison dart in his back, and if it was a modern comic, he would be... That's how they would become friends. He'd pull that dart out.
Yeah.
And it's all about showing a little bit of empathy with the character. He had to take the bear down because the bear basically became drugged up and in a psychosis and slaughtered a bunch of people.
And I mean, this is like, that's like a genre setup. Like, I mean, there's like flip books and stuff of like Superman killing a brontosaurus and stuff. So like just man versus beast,
yeah,
kind
sure.
of thing. And so in the 80s, he's kind of like, it's an updated version. So it's like, you know, he has to do it. He regrets it, but it is giving you all the grim thrills and chills that you're coming to a Wolverine story for, but it's giving you like an out, like a moral out. So you can be like, oh, well, you know, it's an act of mercy or whatever.
This is a fascinating piece right here. This portrait of Mariko, Wolverine's main love interest, because this comic is inked by Joseph Rubinstein. And this duotone application is just freaking gorgeous. It makes me wonder, like, whose decision that was. Mm-hmm. Was that a Frank Miller decision? And if so, then Rubinstein is making decisions by, like, what's going to be in black ink, what's going to be in duotone, including, like, these teeth and stuff. Like, this is a very well-executed illustration. I would bet you, like, whenever we went to go visit Kagan and he pulled out those Fairborn systems, mm-hmm. and we saw, like, the face from the guy in Electra Lives Again, this is pretty spot-on human facial portrait. I wonder if we'd find this lady in the pages of those books.
And, like, when we talk about, like, that kind of duo shade and duotone in, like, an issue of, like, Daredevil or something, we tend to credit
Klaus Janson.
Janson with it. So, like, it would only be fair to kind of give the same kind of, you know, thought to Joe Rubinstein. But who knows, yeah.
Yeah, I would bet that Miller, like, calls it out. And then it's up to Rubinstein to execute. But also, if you look close, man, there's Zipitone in the back. Mm-hmm. So it's Zipitone, it's Duotone. Mixed media approach here, man.
I love his apartment. Like, I love the stylization of how it's just, like, you know, it goes right up to the window. You know, like, there's not a apartment next to his or anything. Like, it's just, you know, just these cool, like, sort of comic book design decisions that aren't, you know, you're kind of throwing reality out the window a little bit. Like, if, you know, as long as it looks cool.
Got a big-ass loft. There is, I'm presuming that they used a little Marvel method, guessing, but the staging is really dramatic, mm-hmm. you know, like, I just try to imagine, like, the concept of, like, Marvel method, working with somebody and not knowing what the words are going to be, just sounds bizarre to me, mm-hmm. to try to work in that kind of headspace. So it's like, does Chris Claremont say, and then there's a shocking revelation, and then you have to draw, like, the panel of shocking revelation, and then there's a really good flow.
Yeah, I mean, I just imagine Miller being, like, a lot more hands-on with every aspect of this, just because that's him,
This is that piece too. Like, does everybody know who Wolverine is? Because he just is, like, getting dressed in front of some random dude.
Oh, you mean of, like, does he have a secret identity?
Yeah,
I'm kind of interested in the idea of Wolverine as like a superhero, because he does seem to occupy this other space, for me at least. Like, I don't know if maybe somebody, you know, coming in from a different angle would be like, oh, of course, he's just a superhero, just like everybody else. But to me, he seemed like he's, you know, out of some other, you know, tradition. And seems like a character almost like tailor-made for Miller, because he's got kind of his, like, you know, sense of honor. He's got, like, his samurai aspects, and then just all the, like, you know, I like hard living and, yeah. and liquor and bar fights and, you know, smoking my stogie.
So that's a fascinating wonky pose we have right here.
Those wolves, again, like, he's not referencing a...
That's Frank Miller wolves, man. Yeah. Like, he uses them in, like, 300. There might even be a Sin City piece that has, like, weird-looking wolves like this, like coyotes or something.
They look like they're pulled off of, like, hieroglyphics.
Yeah.
Chris Claremont and Miller, they're, like, so, you know, fascinated with, like, Japan, Japanese culture, Japanese pop culture, like, the whole bag. And you know, at this point in the 80s... You know, probably the audience was, like, in the dark about a lot of this stuff, too. So, they're kind of giving you a tour of, like, their understanding of it.
If it's 87, man, like, things are way amping up, mm-hmm. you know, for ninja craze and stuff like this.
It's just, like, because they show up and they show you a little bit of kabuki theater.
Yeah.
There's a fight that takes place in, like, a rock garden. And so it's, like, almost like, you know, this, like, little, you know, tourist trip or something, you know?
Chris Claremont's always funny, too, with, you know, I sort of credit him with the, foreign language translation stuff.
Those brackets or whatever.
The brackets, yeah. Like, I can't remember an instance where that occurred before him. And then within those brackets, you'd get asterisk... you know, from the Japanese or something, like, translated from Japanese. But there would still be Japanese words, and it would be the few Japanese words that Chris Claremont would know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's like, you know...
all his X-Men are that way.
Yeah, Nightcrawler being like, Fräulein, you know, like, throwing in some... Yeah, exactly.
Another, like, super, like, well-constructed face that just humbles the hell out of me, man.
Well, and he gives himself, like, the real estate to do it. That would be a lot harder to do, you know, in this...
If you have this real estate... You better do it right, man, because that will just, you're not, there's no place to hide,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, the pressure's on.
And we see what kind of badass he is early on, man. So when you see his old lady getting thumped on, you know Wolverine is feeling some type of way, man.
Like, I know this becomes part of, like, the context of, like, the larger X-Men, you know, mythology and stuff, and gets, you know... goes in all kinds of different directions after this. I like how contained this is.
Yeah.
And he does go on a journey, and he does start out as kind of like a slob and a schlub and a violent idiot. And then by the end, you know, makes himself, you know, into, you know, like, the perfect samurai or whatever, you know, like, and worthy.
He gets the honor sword, man. That's the arc. You know, he is a man of honor. And that is foretold in that very beginning piece with the bear, basically, mm-hmm. man. It's kind of a foretelling.
I feel like every now and then we see, like, the influence of, like, Lone Wolf and Cub popping in. And that panel in particular looks like it's, you know...
When we get to these well-choreographed fights, of which there are many, and at least one in every single issue, that makes me think of Lone Wolf and Cub. But what Miller's going to bring to the table is the widescreen format. There were those baby cart movies that all those mm-hmm. guys swore by, man... A.K.A. Lone Wolf and Cub.
Right, yeah.
So...
The baby cart assassins.
Yeah.
Yeah, and these fight scenes, they're really well choreographed, and there's, like, story content. There's, like, stakes. There's, you know, something going on beyond just the fight that's being settled in the fight. Like, Wolverine is dishonoring himself or clearing himself or what. Like, they're not just gratuitous fights.
Right. How convenient to have those rice paper wall gimmicks, man, when you're having your fight, because don't have to focus on too much background detail. And this sequence right here, I feel like was used by many cartoonists many times. And one of the places that I'm thinking of is in a Mark Silvestri X-Men comic where the blob is descending from an airplane. And, like, right here is about crotch level. And then he gets closer and just blackness.
And, I mean, again, another artist would maybe, you know, use it, you know, for one, but, like, that you go to black and then you have, like, you know, the image, you know, of his you know, fiance, of his soon to be fiance or what, you know, like, rejecting him.
There's a component of that movie, was it called Shogun? It was like a made for TV movie.
Oh yeah,
that would be on all the time. Mm-hmm. Where you know, the Western
Richard Chamberlain,
guy,
yeah.
Yeah, the Western guys going to Japan and doing all that stuff, man. Like, there's elements of that in here. And yeah. As a boy growing up, having no cable, they would put Shogun on like every Easter or something, like once a year during some holiday. Shogun would be on. So, like, that was certainly in pop culture.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because it actually was, like, pretty huge, and you can kind of see its imprint on, like, a lot of stuff, you know, of that era. And I think it was, like, a show from, like, the 70s, but like you said, they just kept, like, running it.
I think it was a mini-series.
Yeah, it was a mini. It was, like, one of those prestige TV mini-series.
Yeah. You know? It's like, first we have Roots, and that's a huge hit. Like, yeah. What else you got? What else you got? Mm-hmm. Shogun. Gotta give shouts to, I guess, Glynis Wein for this treatment. Like, this is one of those puzzling aspects of the comic, because this is genius to me.
Yeah.
This is incredible. And what is the division of labor here? I'm going to put the onus on the colorist, because there are many different, like, screens being used. Like, if it was just a hard cyan or hard magenta, I would say that's like an inked, like, surprint from the inker.
I was just curious how it printed in this. It's pretty comparable. But when you get into, like, reprints of these kind of things, glossy, because, like, he's done that trick in like, you know, Daredevil issues also. And this is still, like, the same kind of, you know, treatment and screens and stuff. But when you start getting into, like, glossy paper and digital production, they'll, like, redraw this stuff in, like, the Photoshop spray paint tool, you know, and it's just egregious.
All right, we're into issue 2.
And again, each cover, pretty, like, simple, iconic.
It makes perfect sense. Like, when you go to the magazine section at Barnes & Noble or something, you see one striking image of Angelina Jolie, you know? Like, for some reason, these cartoonists today, these pencilers today, and for a million years,
for the past 50 years,
there's something in their mind that I think it equates to money, where I'm getting paid
by the line,
triple the rate of the interior page, so I have to bleed triple the amount that I do on an interior page, and it's just these competitive things. Knowing that that's what you have to compete with on the rack. Do one striking image of, you know, a main character with nothing else, you're going to stand out like a sore thumb on that rack.
Well, with something like this, you have to do more thought than drawing. And that's really scary and paralyzing, to sit there kind of like just thinking it through, as opposed to like just putting your pencil on the page and scribbling away. And yeah, like you were saying, like by issue 2, Miller kind of like takes over and he's off and running. And it does feel a lot more like a Miller comic at this point, like, you know, this double splash, you know, we're kind of leading into some of the rooftop stuff we see in Sin City. Or
see, now this is making me think that this is an old comic, but pre-87.
Yeah, sure.
Because you see the Foot Clan doing this kind of stuff,
right?
Like these, like, rooftop sequences and shit. And I just wonder if they pulled from this influence. Once again, great use of negative space. This is a very interesting two-page spread, because he's allowing all that white to be on that page. And the white, the negative space, is a character in this comic, man. Mm-hmm. It breaks things up in an amazing way. And when designing two-page spreads, you got to have two focal points. Like, you have to have a focal point on one page and the other. And it's interesting, like, you could point to, like, either of these as, like, the main piece.
Yeah.
But everything is pointing toward Wolverine, who is the main focus.
And again, always up. Like, yeah. It's always sending your eye up. And, like, here, you know, like, you're the guy on the street looking up admiringly at the action of the superhero.
Don't you feel like it was a wasted opportunity? Like, he didn't go full Kurosawa, Throne of Blood, and just have this, our boy, I mean,
riddled with arrows stuck in him.
Yeah, of course. Like, he's a dude with the healing factor. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're ever going to, like, use that imagery, like, why wouldn't it be here? Yeah. Like, how is he dancing between the raindrops?
Yeah, just, like, make him into a pincushion.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what's great about Wolverine. He can, like, just take a beating. And I also like every time his claws pop, they have a different like, they're just different shapes, they're different construction. Sometimes they're these ones where it's like a samurai sword or something, and then sometimes they're like pointy cones,
right?
But again, that's like comics. You can play around with that kind of stuff.
Rob Liefeld, when he would do his Wolverines, he adopted these like thick-ass knives, man. And certainly there's that McFarlane Hulk cover. You don't get to see the Incredible Hulk in the claws if they're not this thick.
Yeah.
Good silhouettes throughout this entire series.
I always kind of wondered, like, is Wolverine the number one superhero in Canada? Like, is he Canada's Superman? Because, like, just the fact that he's Canadian and he's such a popular, like, and for a long time was, like, the character, like, the superhero character. Like, I wonder if he means something different in Canada as opposed to here.
Hoche Anderson, man. Wolverine or Captain Canuck? You choose.
Yeah, I mean, because Wolverine, like, he, yeah, forget about Captain Canuck. Like, Wolverine is Canadian Superman. Like,
the Canucklehead.
And the thing that he has over Superman, like, he's actual, like Wolverine can actually, like, sell books.
Right.
You know? So it's like, you know, the only thing holding him back from being the number one superhero in America is that he's not American.
And once again, another, like, beautiful kind of, like, you know, comic book piece. His loft penthouse apartment became a loft studio apartment.
Yeah, again, it's you know, this is comics.
I forget, like, is this character, is she Lady Deathstrike?
You know, that's what's so funny, like, early on reading this, because, like, I don't have, like, a huge X-Men knowledge, but, like, I'm like, okay, which one of the women in this story becomes Lady Deathstrike? Because I thought maybe it's her. I thought maybe it's even, you know, Wolverine's wife. Like, maybe something goes wrong during the wedding and she becomes Lady... Like, I didn't know. Like, I think she's... She comes out of this... Like, she works for Wolverine's father-in-law the same way she works for Wolverine's father-in-law. But I don't know if they're the same... I don't think they're the same character, but yeah, maybe. Like, it's kind of funny that we don't know that.
You know, it's so Byzantine, these constructs that Chris Claremont put together. Probably was, like, some idea in one issue that, you know, this is her.
It's her clone.
Because there's even a caption in here where Wolverine says something like, you know, Mariko can trace her family back 3,000 years. I know my father, but that's about it. And he just gives you that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because this is before... Like, this is before we had, like, a Wolverine origin story. Like, even, like the origin story that came out, I think, in, like, the early 2000s or something.
Well, I mean, there's that. But then there's, like, you know, issue 10 where it's Sabretooth versus Wolverine. And it's pretty much understood that, like, Sabretooth is Wolverine's dad by Chris Claremont's standards, which are the correct ones. And then you see this weird stuff, right? That looks like one of the Dave Cockrum... fucking Legion of Superheroes ladies or something.
Well, I mean, you know, Wolverine, you know, that Dave Cockrum brought so much of his Legion of Superheroes aesthetic to the X-Men. And it is kind of funny how different their image is. Like, the image of the Legion of Superheroes is kind of, like, goofy and dumb and, you know, for nerds. And then X-Men are cool. But meanwhile, like so much of the aesthetic is the same guy.
The dividing line, too, man, is that one issue in the early X-Men where they go to the Shi'ar galaxy and fight those, like, gladiators and all that stuff. And it's that two-page spread. Like, it looks like X-Men versus the Legion of Superheroes. Mm-hmm. This is such an effective and simply constructed panel. Like, I wonder how much thought has to go into coming up with this, because it's fucking genius. Like, I can point to probably, in my mind's eye, three or four different kinds of comics that have the sneaking on the rafters motif. None are as effective
as this. Yeah, yeah. Like when we were talking about the printing ink rollers in that Miller Spider-Man issue. It's kind of like, it's like
genius.
Really efficient problem solving.
Genius.
And I also like seeing, like, the color.
The overprint.
Yeah, the overprint, not the pure black. Like, that's such, like, a comic book thing.
Yeah, man. It's one of those things that Jimmy captures so well in his...
I was going to say, like, I wasn't really aware of it as a thing until I saw Jim go out of his way to reproduce it in, like, you know, Aphrodisiac or whatever.
Here's your aforementioned Kabuki fight sequence. And the idea is that, like, this is interesting, right? Like how do we convey motion of, like, the Kabuki, you know, fuss and muss? And it's just, like,
weird little
swirly speed line. And Wolverine smells a rat. more accurately, he smells a little poison on the tip of that sword that's coming for his beloved, man, so he has to dispatch that guy.
Gotcha.
And then these spreads, right? Like having one face, two face.
Yeah, yeah,
smart spread. Bookending the spread.
Her gotcha thing kind of dates it, too. Like, that feels like super 80s.
Gotcha from LJN?
Yeah.
Where you use the controller and the zapper?
Yeah, and the gotcha movie starring Anthony Edwards. Which would have been, like, I guess, 83 or something.
Frank Miller loves those little hats, man. See, this is definitely, like, his, like, Lone Wolf and Cub vibes, man.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, these kind of moments, like... Like, these moments...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like Ninja Gaiden, cut screens.
Right.
You know,
it comes from Kurosawa, you know, Jimbo.
Yeah, and you're just, you know, you're working through your influences. You're like grooving to something. Like maybe a bunch of Lone Wolf and Cub comics, you know, showed up on, you know, in his office, and he's flipping out over them.
This is a good piece, man. Where, you know, he had this relationship with Mariko, but she'd never seen this side of him
mm-hmm.
before, and she sees him while out. And is questioning things.
And sees it happen on a stage.
And she's frightened
mm-hmm.
while, you know, Yukio is perhaps a little damp.
Yeah, these are noir tropes. And it is like, you know, where it's like he's got the girl who's
his
from
mom.
His world.
Yeah.
You know, he has the girl who's from his world, who's dark and dirty and stuff, and is like... You know, possibly like a soulmate, like, but like he feels like he's something better than that. And then he has the girl who's like from the better side of town, who like he wants to, you know, and feels like he is part of her world.
What a striking cover right here.
Mm-hmm.
Great lighting underneath that nose. That lighting is spectacular.
And he's looking down at his hands. He's feeling remorse over what those hands did. And he's, you know, resheathed his claws.
It is a new issue. So we have to tell you that he's the best there is at what he does, and that his name is Wolverine.
I like this little step here. It's kind of jaunty.
He's in the air. And another cool coloring approach.
You know, somebody getting thrown through the window, and I noticed, like, the bar that he was in Canada when he was or Alaska or whatever, when he killed the bear, was also called Josie's. So Josie's is like a franchise, and they have, like, the Alaskan Josie's, the New York Josie's.
The Sin City Josie's,
yeah.
I believe.
Yeah, it's like TGI Fridays or something.
This is so funny to me. Like, Chris Claremont, what are you thinking? You got all these guys just, like, pointing at him. He's drunk. He's worse for the wear. He's not himself. Wait, my brothers, the time is not yet ripe. It's like, how can it not be more ripe with 1,000 dudes aiming arrows at him? Also, I realized, like, the way that you kill Wolverine is all you have to do is give him a good slice on that neck and hit that carotid
mm-hmm.
or the jugular or something. It's all over. Like, all that blood is seeping out of his system, and he'll be done.
And this is like a Miller motif, like the hot gates.
Yeah.
From 300, and he does it in Sin City.
Yeah, Big Fat Kill. Look at these drunken lovers.
Yeah, and she's saying, like, you know, we're so alike. You know, you're part, you know. We're part of the same world. And
speaking to your Japanese fetish of Claremont and Frank Miller, man, you got to have the Shinkansen bullet train.
And then he has his dream, and this is like who he is in his dream. He's a samurai, and like, and the way they cast his, and there he is as the pincushion, like you were talking about. He's cast as sort of a ronin in this story.
Yeah.
You know, he's like a dishonored samurai. Like he was trained with all the honor and stuff, but it somehow got fucked up somewhere along the way. And this is his dream life. And I would imagine around this time, this is probably Chris Claremont and Frank Miller's dream life. Like when they go, this is a Frank Miller, Chris Claremont wet dream.
Shouts to Glennis with her color choices as well, by
yeah,
the way, man, by having just like these like warm colors. You know, you go from this cool setting, warm colors, back to cool.
Mm-hmm. And that is like, that's his romantic fantasy. And then this is like his cold reality.
Yeah. Everybody's a double and triple agent. There's mm-hmm. nobody to trust. And the drama of that in this comic is akin to like Metal Gear Solid or something, where you just know everybody's against you. Everybody's playing the game for themselves.
Yeah, like the genre dictates it. Like the you know, it, he is doing kind of, it's kind of a spy story, kind of a noir story. You know, it's just more fun. And like I don't reading this, I don't get too caught up in like the plots, the backstabbing and like it's kind of just you know, like some sugar
Yeah,
to like put on the narrative.
it's a lightweight story. Like these guys are two of the biggest named talents, the two biggest named talents at Marvel at the time. It makes sense that they do something together, and they could have done anything, you know. Their name equity is selling it all, and this is just a romp, really. Like also,
Which is my favorite thing.
it could be just a silent comic.
Yeah.
Like Chris Claremont does not have to really be in the equation very much. Here we got like Blade Runner element,
Yeah.
man. Like
Yeah.
all you have to do is go visit Shibuya, and you can't get Blade Runner out of your mind. The overprinting is like real fascinating here too, because it's like 100% yellow plate again across the whole thing, and then cyan over top so that you get that like poppy red.
And here's where they crash into a rock garden. You know, just to remind you again of where you're at.
I thought like this was really
Yeah, that
effective.
was really striking. Again, like this is like a visual problem-solving thing that Miller was like continually working on. And then in that like sort of Elektra Lives Again era of just like, you know, somebody versus a room full of ninjas, and he's found like a million amazing solutions to, like it's just, you know, I could eat it up.
When we did Elektra Lives Again and we were showing off some of the I mean going through the pages, some people like showed up and were like, yo, he cribbed from a manga, and they show the original inspirations and stuff, man. So it's pretty interesting. It might have been like Lady Snowblood or something.
Yeah, I mean that Lady Snowblood makes sense because there are a lot of those scenes in it where it's like in a snowy field and then a slash of blood, you
Right.
know.
All right, man. Got our last issue. Look at him, feral and stalking.
Yeah,
And
and he.
like Freddy Krueger. Like my conceit was always like Wolverine is Freddy Krueger to the guy who's on the wrong side of him. These Morays are interesting. It's Zipitone fighting the color separations, I think.
Yeah, the Morays on your copy are really wild because it looks like they might have even shrunk the art a tiny bit or something, like, but they're like
Yeah.
super intense. Maybe it's just the saturation.
And the logical conclusion, right?
And then this is like iconic right here too, and such a Miller thing of like the guy all like Ramboed up.
Yeah.
And then, you know, here's the tools of the trade.
Some more of that gotcha gimmick.
Yeah. Yeah, like gotcha. That's a real zinger. Like that's a real catchphrase, you know, at this point in time.
You have to have your one little slight confrontation with the women who are vying for Wolverine's affections.
And for his soul, because
Yeah.
they both represent two, you know, different ways of living your life.
And Yukio is like flexing. I could have killed this chick. I could have, but I didn't.
Yeah, like I was thinking, like, you know, she's kind of like, you know, a convenient plot device because, like, you know, we want Wolverine's fiance's husband out of the picture, you know, and get him out of the picture with, but keeping Wolverine's hands clean. So like, you know, she's kind of perfect. I like in yours, it's like magenta versus the red,
Well,
or are we
different
okay? Yeah, different
page.
page. Okay, so yeah, yours, mine's magenta too.
Yeah. And you got to have your epic fight sequence.
Yeah,
Still
the.
choosing to use that widescreen format. I guess that widescreen is good for like the swords. You could really draw the stretch
Yeah.
and the arm extension of these blades.
Yeah, if you want to see like what a sword fight looks like in like a vertical panel, like a 9-panel grid, check out Steve Ditko's Chuck Norris and the Karate Commandos, and
Absolutely.
it's not as effective.
Yeah,
I
absolutely.
mean, Miller, all his fights were kind of on that horizontal, like
Yeah.
in Daredevil, it's like
Sure.
such a trope of like he's surrounded by like six guys, and then you know
And then he's
takes
gonna
them out
switch
one
it.
at a time.
Then he's gonna switch it up and have these like long panels, and I
Yeah.
feel like these are kind of like hard to compose for, man, but he found a lot of interesting solutions for that.
And you'd think like just as like a design strategy, it's like, okay, I'm going so horizontal. How do you change it up? Make it vertical. And this vertical stuff is probably like the element of Miller's approach that's been like least copied into the modern day. Like, the widescreen stuff is still, like, is kind of the dominant form in superhero comics today. The vertical stuff, you rarely see somebody doing these vertical
comics. You don't see it now, but the guys who did take from this exact thing were the Image dudes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is an early, you know, this is an 80s piece. The Next Generation is McFarlane and Liefeld and all those guys. Jim Lee, like, they would all use these kinds of panels, probably from a direct influence. And once again, shout out to whoever made the choice to, like, have the color kind of, like, print on the face from the rice paper walls. That's such an effective and cool thing. And it makes me wonder, once again, the division of labor. Did Glennis choose that? Did Frank Miller choose that? And it was executed by Rubenstein? Like, how does that work? Something I was always curious about. And the comic ends with... okay, so this lets us know, man, this is the Paul Smith era of X-Men, whenever that was. And that's actually not helping me. because this is a cover to, like, maybe next month's issue of X-Men.
I mean, like, the Paul Smith stuff, isn't that, like, 83 or something? Like,
I think this is early, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, I love the ending. Like, I love the ending to this, and I copied it for Transformers versus G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. But, like, I love the ending because it's, like, this noir, dark, you know, urban kind of, like, you know, story. And then it ends, like, this is the last kind of ending you would have expected.
It becomes a page of X-Men.
Yeah, yeah. And like, it ends on a light note. And that you know, and a hopeful note, and a positive note. As opposed, like, I would, like, reading this, I would picture it ending like A Dame to Kill For, or where like Wolverine has to, like, shoot somebody, you know, somebody.
By the way, everybody's shouting at us, man, but Lynn Varley colored this issue.
Okay, yeah.
I wonder if she colored some other ones. She didn't color all of them.
Okay. This is interesting. So, like, Miller's putting his team together.
And then, speaking to your 87, this is Frank Miller talking about, I hope you were reading this comic from you got it at a bookshop. I hope this is your first comic. He doesn't say that it's, you know, bleeding edge or, you know, woodshedding type of exercise, but he basically ends his piece with, try another comic. You might like
him. He's not like, here's what I put next to Mouse.
Yeah. He mentions Watchmen, but he doesn't mention Dark Knight Returns, so he has a little bit of a humbleness to him. Anyhow, man, there it is, man. The Wolverine miniseries. Jimmy and I, we talked about it several times, and I know he's not the biggest fan, so...
Yeah, I mean, like it's a romp. It's, like, lightweight, especially compared to other things in Miller's thing. But, man, I love a light, fun, bouncy superhero comic that's got a little bit of, you know, a little bit of grim and gritty sprinkled in the mix. Like, this is, you know, right up my alley.
Worth taking a look at, certainly in the pantheon of, or the bibliography of Frank Miller. It's, you know, one of the pieces that is often overlooked. So it was fun to give it another glance because I haven't read this thing since I was a freaking kid.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, like, it's in pretty regular rotation for me. But again, like, I only read it for the first time maybe like 6 years ago. So.
Oh, cool. Anyhow, kayfabers, like, follow, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Hit the bell. We'll notify you when new vids are available. Hit up Jimmy's Patreon. He's on kayfabe business as we speak. Patreon.com/JimRugg is where you're going to find PDFs of hundreds of pages of all kinds of material, from drawings, pen and ink, ballpoint pen illustrations, lots of process materials, process zines, all sorts of stuff at patreon.com/JimRugg. What do you have, Tom?
Check out Jack Kirby, The Epic Life of the King of Comics, Fantastic Four Grand Design, and check out my YouTube channel, Total Recall Show, and my Patreon. Go to patreon.com, search Tom Scholey.
My Red Room comics are in the wild, Murder on the Dark Web, Fun and Profit. Go to my link tree in the description below this video. You're going to be able to order these comics from Fantagraphics. You're going to be able to hit up my Patreon and that link tree to read these comics before they hit paper. We have t-shirts and merchandise at our spread shop in the links below, and sign up for our mailing list. Jimmy's not here, man. So Tom, you're tasked with giving the marching order so we could get the hell out of here.
Read more Miller Marvel Comics.